The Book of Esther, also known as the Megillah or Scroll, is read every year in synagogues around the world on the 14th and 15th days of the month of Adar to commemorate the festival of Purim. Purim originates from the word pur, which means the lot. It was during the reign of King Xerxes that the fate or lot of the Jewish people turned about in a fortunate reversal of events. This reversal of fortune is attributed to the brave intervention of Esther, an orphan refugee, a mighty girl who risked her life to save her people. The book says, "And so these days are celebrated as a memorial and observed in each and every generation, each and every family, each and every province, and each and every city. And these days of Purim shall not pass away from the Jews, nor their remembrance disappear from their descendants." End quote. I want to welcome our friends. Thank you for coming. Welcome this morning. It's so good to see you. The Book of Esther is a tale of Jewish identity and life in the diaspora, concerned with moral issues and the preservation of the tradition of the celebration of the festival of Purim. It is about not forgetting that the safety and well-being of the people must be considered paramount. It is an example of women's courage and ability to deliver an entire nation. The abolitionists and suffragists, including Angelina Grimke and Sojourner Truth, invoked Queen Esther's name as a symbol of women's strength and relevance in the struggle to attain equal rights, an example of the need for human agency and intervention to deliver the people in times of danger and repression. The Esther legend represents the quintessential underdog story and continues to inspire with the potential for success, seemingly weak and insignificant little orphan girl who comes out of hiding, risking her life by revealing her true Jewish identity. The celebrations of the Feast of Purim include reading the Book of Esther, which we have done a little bit, giving money gifts, which we'll do soon, and a festive Purim feast with music and food and much merriment, which we will do right after service. Today is Canvas Sunday, and as we prepare to take stock of our resources, we remember all those who have risked coming out of hiding and intervening on behalf of those at the margins. We celebrate our Unitarian Universalist denomination for delivering us from harmful religious dogma that would deny our true and beautiful selves. We prepare to give back to this community, which has been a sanctuary for those in search of a liberal and inclusive faith that honors the inherent worth and dignity of every person, that upholds the democratic process, that recognizes our interconnectedness, that honors and defends Mother Earth. Now more than ever, we need a reversal of our fate in this nation. We need the courage of each and every one of us to defend basic human rights, healthcare, education, and freedom of religion. We Unitarian Universalists have historically been the underdogs, small in size, yet influencing the moral fiber of this nation. Whether it was burning Vietnam War draft cards on the steps of Arlington Street Church in Boston, or walking with Dr. King in Selma, or more recently joining Moral Mondays with Reverend Barber, or defying ICE and the current administration by offering sanctuary in one of our Denver churches, we Unitarian Universalists are mighty in principles. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
All right. And that just means you agree with me, right? Okay, just checking. Ever since November, we have felt like the tide has been turning us back in time. back in history in an attempt to rob us of our worth and dignity, to erase the struggle of generations that fought for democracy, for inclusiveness, for equality, for justice and peace. This little and mighty congregation is committed to reverse the tide that is drowning us in fear, that is forcing people into hiding and sentencing them to live and die on the margins. Now is the time for the great reversal of our fate, which can only be accomplished in unity, in perseverance, and in willingness to take action. And we have to be deliberate. We can't leave it to chance. What we are defending today is not only out there in Washington, D.C., but it is right here in our community, in this sanctuary, in this neighborhood, in this city. We are defending the worth and dignity of every person. We are defending the worth and dignity of our brothers and sisters who are Muslims. We are defending the worth and dignity of our brothers and sisters who are undocumented. We are defending the worth and dignity of our neighbors, our friends, because Black Lives Matter. Can I get an amen?
Amen.
Thank you. Thank you. Whether it is access to clean water or bathrooms that match our gender, whether it is education, housing, healthcare that is accessible to everyone, reproductive rights, humane immigration policies, environmental justice, this little mighty congregation will continue to speak up, will continue to open our doors wide open for all. Amen?
Amen.
Thank you. In this holy space, a lot of organizing and conspiring and strategizing takes place. Also, a lot of healing takes place in the form of prayer, singing, meditation, holy listening, pastoral care, nurturing friendships, the celebration of joys, and the sharing of sorrows. In this place, we offer and receive the gift of being able to bring our whole authentic selves without fear of rejection or persecution. You all have made it possible for us all to proudly display a rainbow flag. You have encouraged our generosity to share the plate with community partners who care for the homeless and the hungry. You are nurturing generations by promoting creativity, exploration of feelings and beliefs, a religious education program that lifts up the beauty of all faiths, that encourages compassion and offers opportunities for our children to find spiritual experiences in nature, in science, and just friendship. You are supportive and committed to turning back the tides of toxic waste, to defending Mother Earth, to prioritizing water and food over oil. You are committed to providing our elders with meaningful experiences that recognize and celebrate their wisdom and contributions to our community. Now more than ever, brothers and sisters, siblings, we need to celebrate community, to be united, and to show generosity and support the transformative work of this congregation. Today, we celebrate by being together and remembering those who came before us and remembering those who are yet to arrive. Now, my grandmother was not a Unitarian Universalist or Jewish, surprise. But today, thank you. Today, I am remembering her as a mighty woman who taught me the same values and principles that we hold dear and defend right here. She taught me to remember and count all the blessings that we have already received, beginning with the people whose grace and generosity of spirit make our lives richer. Let's call them to mind. Let's lift them up in our hearts. My grandmother taught me to replace scarcity mentality with abundance mentality. This is coming from a woman who was a school teacher, widowed before the age of 30, raising four children on her own, and whose home was always open for those less fortunate in the family. And family had a very wide meaning for her. When my mother recalls her childhood, she always mentions the many relatives and friends who became part of the household during difficult times. They were not seen as poor or having nothing. They were contributors of magical stories, delicious recipes, avid gardeners, carpenters, seamstresses and quilters, healers, fabulous dancers, poets, and so much more. Resources were pooled, money as well as chores and creative arts, and all gave according to their ability for the benefit of all. My mother taught me a lot about money. She worked hard selling housewares door to door and kept a little red book with her accounts. Everyone in our neighborhood bought on credit. And my mom would have to go back many times, knocking on doors, asking for the monthly payment. Sometimes people could not pay, and sometimes they wouldn't even open the door. At night, I would hold that notebook with all the names and the notations and all the numbers in blue and in red and in green, touching the creased pages and the fading ink soaked in my mother's sweat and perhaps her tears. A paper oracle whose hieroglyphics predicted whether I would have shoes for the new school year, the number of meals we would have, or whether my mother could afford to pay rent or we would have to move yet again that year. Eventually, my mom opened up a little convenience store, which is where I learned my first lesson about money. While my mother helped a customer, I stood on a crate behind the ice cream machine. A little girl handed me a bill and said she wanted a chocolate cone. I proceeded to serve her ceremoniously, and she left. Well, a few moments later, the little girl came back with her mother and her father, and they were furious. They said we had cheated them. They demanded correct change. Oops. My mother was mortified and apologized profusely and gave the mother the correct change. The next week, after my mother had received a special shipment of chocolates and bubble gum, I started giving away the chocolate and bubble gum to all the kids in the neighborhood. I figured there's no money involved. I can't get into trouble. You can imagine how happy my mom was that day. Up until then, I had only handled play money. But now I knew that real money could get you into real trouble if you weren't careful. My mom made sure I learned my numbers well if I was going to be in the store again. During my teens, I became aware of money within the context of social justice. I learned that much of what was happening in my country had to do with the distribution of money. In the early 70s, a social precedent instituted the agrarian reform that gave land to the landless, land titles to indigenous people, a government that introduced free health care, free school breakfast, and nationalized our natural resources, copper being the main one, who were held by multinational corporations. I began to make direct connections between the distribution of resources and justice. This awareness would inform the construction of my working class identity, an identity that has shaped my activism and my ministry. In my 20s, I helped my mother clean offices and fancy Manhattan apartments. In my 30s, I put myself through college and law school, working three part-time jobs, teaching ESL in the New York City prison system, best jobs I've ever had. I've been employed by community grassroots organizations and underfunded nonprofits struggling to make ends meet. And now more than ever, I am aware of the direct connection between financial resources and social justice. So I give, and I have my envelopes ready, to the ACLU. And I give to Planned Parenthood. And I give to the National Lawyers Guild. And I give to my hometown children's choir. And now I will also give to this community. It is important for me to be in relationships that are reciprocal. It is important for me to feel a sense of responsibility and a sense of belonging. After all, this is my new home. Now, I have been told that I don't have to give anything, and in fact, many of my colleagues do not contribute financially to the church they are serving. But for me, this is about so much more than the money. It's about building beloved community, and it's about honoring my mother and my grandmother, who remind me that generosity is never limited. They believe that keeping the doors open to your home is the most radical and kind gesture you could make, especially in difficult times. My grandmother was a mighty woman, small in stature, yet in my eyes, my Queen Esther, a giant with a heart of gold who reversed the lot of so many in my family. For me, pledging is about belonging. It's about sharing. It's about recognizing the value of our many gifts, being willing to give for the benefit of all. It's about keeping these doors open and together resisting the forces of evil that threaten all of us. It is about protecting this sanctuary for our spiritual connection and nourishment. I've been told that if each of us, all 135 members, gave $1,300, we would be in good shape to meet our budget goals. And if, in addition, each of us gave an extra $100, we could make our dream of having a part-time music director a reality. So after taking into account my rent, utilities, cat food, 2 student loans, and my other charitable contributions, my check today is made out for $1,500. Yes, I know what I said only adds up to $1,400, but my mother has a name for that. In Spanish, it's called yapa, sort of like the cherry on top. You always give a little more. So I'm giving you my yapa from my heart. On this Purim season, may we feel the strength of our mighty little congregation to reverse the waves of fear and hatred. May we feel reaffirmed in being part of a courageous Unitarian Universalist religious tradition that stands on the side of love. May we feel the gratitude of being part of a compassionate and kind community. And may we rejoice in singing together a song of hope guided by love. May this be so. Blessed be. Amen and Ashe and Amen, Amen, Amen.